Hi.
Hi, welcome back.
Okay, this one's for you, Rivka.
Okay.
Religion is a system. It's a specifically Judaism, it's a system of laws, but a system that has expectations on you, in which case there's this load on your shoulders that's both existential, but also very practical. You're expected to do things. Things are expected of you from other people and from God. This has a massive weight on your very being. You're expected to do things there. Now, in a world that's sensitive to mental health, how would you articulate a response to someone who came with a critique that actually, not whether your religion's true or not, but your religion is fundamentally unhealthy?
Okay, good question. So we are in a system where we are almost in a constant state of obligation.
That's a good way of putting it, yep.
Yeah. So how is that not detrimental to our very being if we want to not be... If we want to flourish. Okay. If I had to answer off the top of my head, now obviously if somebody would in person ask me this, I would ask them about their life, about their emotional and mental health, and it will be tailor-made to them. However, off the top of my head, not a specific person, I would split this in two. Mental health as a concept and more general emotional well-being as a concept.
Okay.
Mental health. Thank God we are all much more aware as we used to be of the reality of having mental health concerns, anxiety, depression, OCD, bipolar, different conditions. Now, kind of a gut reaction would be that having more system or more obligation would put more weight on an anyway fragile health state and would be difficult. Now, I would actually disagree with that premise, at least in general. Of course, in particular, for a certain person, you need to talk about things. Oftentimes, mental health will change the way you need to observe laws. However, in general, I would disagree that more system and more obligation is bad for somebody's mental health. Think about 12-step programs. Think about retreats. That's more systematic and rigorous than our daily life with Judaism. Obviously, OCD needs to be thought about specifically. But the others, for example, sometimes being in a system is actually gives you that meaning. It also gives you that relief that you're doing the right thing. I'll give you an example. I had an amazing friend one time, and we were in a dorm together on a campus, and she had a panic disorder. She was having a panic attack next to me. In her pajamas, and she hands me the phone with her therapist on the phone. I take the phone, get on, and her therapist tells me, listen to me, Rivka, you hand her a skirt and you go running around the campus until you are completely finished. Okay, I hang up. I like a drill sergeant. I hand her that skirt, even though it was not fun. I wanted to let her cry in bed, but I handed her that skirt. And we went running, and like these two crazy girls running around campus again and again and again until we were drenched in sweat. We were completely finished and exhausted, but she was feeling better because exercise is known to be really good for these things. But did she want to get out of bed? Did she want to exercise those muscles? No. But having that obligation to run actually helped her. And exercising muscles, both physical and spiritual muscles, are actually good for us. They give us meaning. They make us feel like we did something that day.
Okay, so let me just recap this first point. So you're attacking it in two fronts. You're saying the first point is the mental health side. And you're saying the mental health side, you're pushing back on the assumption that, of course, individual cases have to be looked at as individuals, but you're pushing back on the very principle of the paradigm of religion, structure, system being detrimental by definition, which actually has an intuitive kick to it. You assume more system bad. But you're saying if we look at it from a different perspective, actually a system gives structure, structures give meaning, give obligation, give purpose, give a feeling of accomplishment. And if you actually believe the system is true, the dose of meaning can sometimes justify the difficulty.
Yes, exactly. Now, again, a lot of people who have mental health concerns have had very negative experiences with religion. And then that, again, needs to be discussed on a more individual basis.
For sure.
I'm just giving very, very general ideas. But now emotional health. So now that I've split the question up and we're talking specifically about typical person's emotional well-being. How would you phrase the question now from your point of view?
Okay, so if you've split it up from on the one side being mental health, and I'm sure these there's overlap, obviously. But if I would approach it from a purely emotional standpoint, well, you've got a religion, forget about the whole system side of it. I would say the guilt. You're dealing with truths, and depending on your commitment to these ideas being true, the idea that you will, and naturally we do not live up to our expectations, both secular and religious, when it comes to not living up to a secular value, okay, that's one thing, not living up to a religious value, especially if you pile on, I don't know, whatever metaphysics you believe in, and...
Hell, heaven.
Also the effect you have on other people on a metaphysical level.
Souls, okay.
Depending on your religious orientation and... mystical orientation, you can really get into it and feel really bad. These things can affect you in a profound way, because just to build it, when I do something to a secular relationship, you can do something bad to someone. That's terrible, and a person can feel bad about that. But if you have a religious overlay to your worldview, it's not just you've affected something far more profound and far more deep than just you were mean. It has an extra layer of guilt and depth to every action you do.
Just like the good stuff has an extra layer of depth, the bad stuff has an extra layer of depth. Right, okay. So this answer isn't necessarily going to be emotionally satisfying for someone who's ridden with guilt. But this is, again, what I would answer. I guess I would start the answer with a really cool parable that I read in a book by Sarah Chevy Riegler. She coins a phrase called the Shrek fallacy. You know Shrek. So Shrek and Donkey are off on an adventure, and Shrek says to Donkey, ogres are like onions. And what does he mean by that?
That they have layers.
Yes, so what does he mean by that?
That our outer shell isn't necessarily reflective of what we have deep inside us.
Very good.
Because he's an ogre.
Exactly. And people think that he's just a smelly thing, and really he has feelings. Okay.
It's not about him being smelly. I mean, he probably does smell as well, but it's because he's ugly.
Okay, fine. Ugly. Great. So first layer is ugly. Next layer is smelly.
And his inner core is like an onion.
All beautiful and sweet. Okay, great. So
onions aren't sweet.
Okay. Thank you, Simi. But Shrek is kind of sweet deep, deep down. Anyway, so what he is saying is that we are a bunch of layers, and we may not show each person a certain layer. So... the layer you show to the bus driver is a very outer crust, and the layer you show to your dearest friend, hopefully, is a much more vulnerable inner crust, inner layer. But here's the fallacy, is that if you peel an onion, and you continue peeling, and you continue peeling, and you continue peeling, what comes at the end?
Nothing.
Right, it's just that inner bit.
No, that's an onion as well.
And that's also a layer, exactly. So there's nothing there. So if you were to compare yourself purely to an onion, it's like, yes, you have layers, but are you only the sum total of your layers? Are you only the sum total of your actions and your memories and your maybe not such good actions? What happens if you don't really like your layers? What happens if you've really messed up and some really core layers are ones that you'd rather forget about? So... if you are only the sum total of your layers, if you identify completely with your layers, two things can happen. Either you're so stuck in identifying with your layers, you can never take criticism because, oh no, you're ripping apart my layers. There's nothing else in me. So you become very macho, maybe a bully. You'll never take criticism. Or you'll very much retreat into yourself and become very unsure because you don't know what you have to contribute to the world if you don't like your layers. However, in Judaism, we believe that if you peel all the layers, at the end of it, you have something that nobody can touch. You have something called your soul, a metaphysical piece of God, cannot be touched, cannot be tampered with. Yes, you can draw curtains around your soul, even obscure your soul that you can't even see it from the outside, that it doesn't shine through. But that soul is still there, completely unscratched and unharmed. By default, it cannot be touched.
So just to repeat the idea, you're saying that a person is not like an onion, because an onion has layers, but you are a sum total of your layers in the Shrek example.
Yes.
But we're saying that no, at the very core of your being, you may have layers, but at the core, you have this aspect of you that isn't directly reflected in the layers. It's something that's pure, it's something that's untouched, it's something that is, I suppose you would call it, ultimate potential.
Exactly. Now, this leads to a whole new conversation about relationships, about how you never know the other person completely, or you never know yourself completely, because you can always regenerate from that soul. And it also goes into a whole discussion about living from your soul outward and not from your layers inward.
We could leave those for other podcasts.
Exactly, but I want to actually focus on the concept of teshuva. Teshuva was...
bringing us back to the guilt.
Yes, the guilt. The concept of teshuva, meaning teshuva means to return. And teshuva being the process by which we clean ourselves and become again associated by our soul, with our soul, and become soul powered again, completely soul powered. Teshuva means return. You can only return to something you've been to before. You return home. You return to somewhere you've been. So essentially what teshuva is doing is it's letting you come home, back to your potential. And this is a very hopeful outlook on Judaism. Like, yes, we do mess up, but at any given time, we can come home. And it's not a new place. It's coming back to our core. And I think that that's really the start of any conversation you have to have from Judaism's point of view of emotional health. Because at any given time, we're not talking about a sinful, horrible human being who has to prove his worth by fixing the world today and tomorrow. It's a person who, at his very core, is good and pure and beautiful. And to live that out of this world, you need to understand that you are good, not that you're sinful and have to become good.
So, okay, that's cool.
It's a paradigm shift.
So just let me maybe articulate and you tell me if I'm getting your point right. You're saying the question is based off guilt. Now, the guilt question and how that affects our emotional health is based, once again, on a premise which we're going to question. The premise that we're going to question is that you, generally speaking, approach yourself as being the sum total of your external trappings, in which case, if I've messed up or done something I shouldn't have done, acted in a way that I regret, even if it's a big regret, I don't identify myself as my layers. I identify myself as this core that's at the root of my being, that is ultimate potential and ultimately pure. That notion of teshuva, which is this week's parasha, I mean, it's the whole Egel Azov thing.
Yeah,
the
Jews we'll get to that. We'll get to that.
The Jews, so I won't say that, and I'll cut that out. So we're saying that you, that rather than you being a sum total of your layers, you are at your core something pure. And if you are at your core something pure, this notion of teshuva allows you to return to that point. And when you return to that point, you can renew yourself based off that infinite
from
potential.
From inside out, yes. Well, you actually phrased it better than I did. That was beautiful. And in this week's parasha, we have the concept of the sin of the golden calf, the Egel, where you had people who, buoyed by their fear of no messenger and no emissary between them and God, created that emissary and created that in between of a golden calf, which was kind of horrible to do. And then the most astounding thing is that they gain forgiveness. They come back home. And we use that every single year. That's Yom Kippur for us, when we dress in white and when we act like angels, because we want to identify with that core being in ourselves, that we can always come back home. Make sense?
Yeah. So just to repeat the last part, the Egel, the Jews sinned, and in essence, that's game over. Or either
right,
game...
if you were sinful and now you sinned, or you're just proving it.
So either game over, or you live with that. That you just live with that.
Exactly. You live with that layer.
So you do live with the consequences. But the notion of teshuva is that you can return and start again. That renewal can take place. Doesn't mean we don't live with consequences. But the reflection on who you are, which is the core of the person.
It's the you, not what you did.
Correct. It's which is the core of emotional health.
Right. I would say that
which is self-confidence.
Which is self-confidence. I would say that if somebody identifies with their layers, they'll not be able to take criticism or pointers from somebody else. Why? Because they're attacking what they think is their core. But if somebody identifies with their pure inner soul and somebody gives them feedback or criticism, then they are not identifying with those actions. It's not their core. It's what they do, in which case they can always do better.
So they can grow based off criticism, because it's not a point to their very being. It's a point to their external trappings. External trappings can change, but my inner source of infinite potential isn't being criticized. And that's an infinite source of self-confidence.
Exactly. And that's what the Egel, or better, the Teshuva of the Egel, teaches us.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you so much for listening. Have a great week.